Accession number 9422, reel 8.
Mr. Harold Hayward, reel 8. You were telling me about a cinema in a local French chateau.
Yes, and where the owner of the head of the family, whose chateau it had been for many years, was still in residence, and it was there we met, had the opportunity of meeting other people from other battalions in the division, because they would be out on brigade rest. So we mingled with them, which was a good thing, you know, so we'd get used to each other's badges. And we learned quite a lot, because we were the inexperienced lot, where they'd been out, you know, from 1914. And so we sort of a good opportunity for us to mix in with the division. And it was there we really got a divisional sense of corporate capacity through being out in the line when we were on brigade reserve. But how far it is true, I don't know. But we were told, whether it was leg pull or otherwise, that the Marquis, I've forgotten his name. One time I would know it, but of course I couldn't write it down in case I was captured, then they'd know where we were, that he was in league with the Germans and was passing messages by telephone. Not that there was much for him to pass, but because there was little action either way. But we did hear that he was taken down the line. The French intelligence got him and took him away from his, family house.
Was there much fear about spying like that at this time?
Well, there wasn't much fear. We were warned about it, that any strange person that we didn't recognise, we were to arrest at once and see that he got down to battalion headquarters where they could make an official inquiry. For instance, when I went along the line to the 13th Trench, I was challenged there when I got out of our battalion sector. Who are you? We don't know you. But I was able to give them sufficient information, say, about Bristol. I said, well, you ask me some questions about Bristol or Weston-super-Mare, and you'll see whether you think that I'm somebody dressed up to appear to be one of the 12 Gloucesters or not.
What about the keeping a diary? I suppose you kept a diary. How did you...
Yes, well, I couldn't keep... that sort of thing I could not conveniently do when we were in the trenches. I mean, I needed to be seated and sit down and write, you know, with the diary on my knee. But I put down day-to-day bits of information, but I never put a place name down till a fortnight after we'd left it. You're not supposed to keep a diary, but I didn't think that it was very significant if I only just put down what was being done by any other British soldier all along the line. The only identification then was what division or battalion I was in, regiment, and, you know, where we were.
What other recreations, if diary writing be called that, would you have while you were in brigade rest? Brigade reserve?
I think that... there, in that particular situation, we couldn't even have a game of football or go for walks farther back, because it was such unpleasant country, you know, swamps. So there was no joy in it didn't provide opportunity for the normal recreation that...
Did you get any chance to see any local French civilians?
Not there. Not there while I was still in the line. I can... I can talk about that a bit when we come out on divisional rest.
Did you get any letters or parcels from home?
Yes, very regularly. Very regularly. In fact, as I think I told you that when we got covered with these lice or chats, as they were named, I had Harrison's pomade. That was the cure all, and of course, but that was to kill the blinking chats, run it down, or cover your skin with it, your unbroken skin. But I rubbed it into where I'd scratched and blood, with already made blood. Very unpleasant.
What other things would you get from home in the parcels?
Well, I'd been at a boarding school, and mother used to send me special parcels there. I mean, at boarding school, you don't, in those days, grub was of a rather ordinary nature. So I know mother used to make sandwich cakes and send me one now and again, and she did the same. And my relatives, they would send a parcel, probably containing cigarettes, and yes, well.
Would you share such things out with your friends, your particular friends?
Oh yes, there were two others who came from the same suburb of Bristol as myself. One had been at school with me, the other I made friends with whilst we were training in Bristol, and because we found ourselves in the same platoon, and having sort of cycled away from this big hall, the Colston Hall, for the hour or 2 hours drill during the daytime, we paired up, and he and that was Harold Howell, whose best man I became later on, and Tom Weber, with whom I'd been at school, my year at school, we were very friendly, and we would share. But I'm not certain whether I told you this, that at that time, to have hot drinks was to have café au lait.
But yes, you did.
Yes,
tell us, yes,
I did, about cocoa au lait.
That's right.
Most delectable, yes, thing for the gods.
Would you write home often yourself, and would you get letters from home?
Yes, I would write home every time we were out on reserve, that I could have a sit down and have a knee on which to write, even though it meant sitting on the floor. But at least I wasn't on duty. I wasn't about to be called out on duty. I would know that whether I was down for trench repair that night, but during the daytime, it was more or less we had to ourselves, cleaning up and resting. And it was then that I'd write letters. I wrote a letter, at least one letter, every time we came out onto brigade reserve.
Did you let them know what conditions were like? Because although there wasn't fighting, it was terribly cold.
Well, I did say to my... I remember my father telling me after the war was over, he said, well, we had one letter from you where you said that the land was below the water and the trenches were below the land, which was true enough.
How long... Well, I think we've run through the conditions in this Somme sector, the wet marsh sector of the Somme. You then, I believe, in January 1916, went to divisional reserve, which you've mentioned before.
That's right. It was time for that division to have its his divinal rest and come out of the line, as and would be reserved to the corps of which it formed part, probably two or three divisions in a corps.
Where did you go for this divisional reserve?
Well, quite a distance back, on the way to Amiens, and so far back that at least if we were out, I think we were out for 3 weeks, which was quite a spell. We went into a French village which wasn't occupied, but the REs had put up layers of boarding where you slept. Either you slept on the ground or on the first floor upon the top one. Well, the ideal thing was to be on the first of these stagings, but there was an advantage of being on the floor. The sergeant would come along, he could see the people on the stagings, come on, you're for fatigue, but if you kept quiet, but one kept quiet when one flopped at the fact that he couldn't see underneath, so everything, don't let a paper, oh, we had newspapers, by the by, so mustn't let a newspaper crackle. That's the Paris Daily Mail we had out there, and I've always been a newspaper fiend, and I always would walk a distance to perhaps an expeditionary force canteen where you could buy the Paris Daily Mail.
Were they up to date, or were they?
Oh yes, reasonably so. I mean, 3 or 4 days. That's right. I couldn't get the papers of which had come out on issue whilst we were up the line. I had to buy that day or the days before paper.
So what sort of things would you be doing when you were on divisional rest? Do you know
yes.
the actual town or village
yes,
you're at?
Yes, I remember the weather seemed to get pleasanter into January and February, and I know myself and another one in the same section, we went for a walk to the next village back, which was also evacuated. And we climbed over a wall which was to surround some property, and to my amazement, looking ahead, there was a Buddhist temple, and I wondered how in all the wide world that could be there. So we got to to this Buddhist temple, and I climbed up, and on the front of the Buddha it was the printing, the words, which I suppose are common to all Buddhas at the front of temple, Stupa Buddha Frakyamuni. I never got to ask anybody what it was, but that's merely the anglicised version of it. And I said to this friend, I said, fancy a Buddhist temple. I said, he's probably got rubies for eyes, We climbed up, no rubies for eyes, and I said, well, it's a pretty big building. I can't think of there can be a large number of Buddhists living around here. Still, we don't know. And I said, let's get down, and we got down, and it was not jewelry or jewels or things like that, but. Potatoes. It was being used as a potato store. Great disappointment.
So, were you pretty free during the day?
Yes, and we from this village we used to walk into Amiens, and I went in there several times, and it was about 7 kilometres or something like that.
Do you know the name of the village?
No. And we always used to stop at one particular estaminet call there on the way out to Amiens and coming back to the village where we were stationed. We used to have a feed going out and coming back, and I knew the language a bit, and so I was called upon to do all the translating and the conversation.
What was it like in one of these estaminets?
Well, this you must understand was at least probably 6 to 8 miles behind our reserve line, and it was only about the same distance perhaps into Amiens town, which was that was interesting because I remember going to the Amiens Cathedral, and it was all sacks, you know, that's the word, yes. That's sandbags, yes. And both sides of the west door, very fine cathedral. And we were allowed to go inside, and although no services were then being held, because it was sufficiently near to the line to interfere with ordinary peacetime procedure, but there it was still open and was being cared for inside. And I well remember going up into the chancel and seeing a sign where, both for the men and for the boys, choir boys, if you want to spit, spit now, before the sermon. Seeing that in French, that warning, you couldn't spit during the sermon, but there was trays or long lines of sand where the choir were permitted to spit. I'd been a choir boy in my time. We never had that advantage.
Well, I was asking you about the estaminets that you used to visit, the French cafes. What can you remember about them? What were they like?
Yes, well, they were, first of all, they were warm. They were all heated up. That, in a sense, was something desirable to enjoy. Then they had very good food. Vin rouge, vin blanc, and fried eggs. They're great on fried egg, des oeufs. I, when I got to know these people very well, and I was the intermediary between some of the friends or people who knew me who were there in there, and the actual owners, I got on fairly friendly terms with them, I had little delicacies they produce for sale, but they wouldn't have told anybody else, you know. But steak and things like that, which was rather pleasant.
How many British troops would there be at a time in one of these estaminets? Were they very crowded? You know.
Oh no. Well, it was crowded, but no more than say, perhaps something under a dozen. That's all it would take.
So they were quite small establishments.
Quite small establishments in villages on the way between where we were at. Agny was the name of the place where I saw where I saw the Buddhist temple and Amiens itself, which was well worth a walk round. But one thing we hadn't to do, although many of the streets were vacated, you couldn't. The word's gone. What do people do when there's a big fire around here? Rob the place. What's the word?
Loot.
Loot, yes. No looting. Otherwise, that meant court martial.
Hadn't that been what you were taking a chance of being accused on at the Buddhist temple? Couldn't you have been accused of looking for loot at the Buddhist temple, do you think?
Well, no one would have thought of thinking that I got jewels in my pocket, rubies out of a Buddha's eyes. But I certainly, if they'd been there, I would have dug it out. There's no question about it. I would have done. After all, my line would have been, if I didn't do it, the man who climbed up after me would. I wouldn't have disclosed it to my superiors.
So, what sort of relationship did you have with the French civilians? How did you get on with them?
Very well. When in Amiens, quite different from what it was in Maracor, when we were stealing their, we're taking their water, their drinking water, just to wash ourselves. There wasn't that conflict in Amiens. And such people who were there were quite friendly, and of course the fairly large estaminets. Most of them were living underground, the French people.
But in the cellars?
In cellars, yes. Whether it was a wine country and they had wine cellars, I don't know.
But there was no friction between the troops?
No, not at all there, no. No, my recollection is particularly governed by the little estaminet on the way there. I have a very friendly feeling of Amiens.
Would the British troops and yourself, would they drink much in the estaminets, or...?
Well, they, I think some plenty some fellows, you know, got half seas over. It was there. Spirits were there, not just wine.
But would you yourself drink much, or?
Pardon?
Did you yourself drink much?
I didn't drink spirits. I didn't. The only spirits I drank, incidentally, we ought to have gone back, because that's one thing. At night time.
You mentioned the rum ration, yes.
Yes, and the sergeant saying, I can't think of you fellows. He was drunk by the time he'd got to the end of the platoon.
So you just drink the wine?
That's all, yes.
And not
but probably a rather pleasanter wine than the Henri Vin Rouge or Vin Blanc you got in the smaller villages, Stavis.
Would you have any actual duties during this divisional rest period?
Route marches we did. Route marches and battalion and squad drill, platoon drill, company drill, and even battalion drill.
So you were actually training and drilling
keeping
as well.
Keeping fit. And route marches.
How much of the day would be given over to that sort of thing? Were you only free in the evening?
Well, we may have done some practicing attacks and things like that, as we had done before we left England. But it was a rest. One felt that, the fact that you had that freedom to go into Amiens.
How long? You were there about 6 weeks, you said?
Yes, I remember once I did have too much to drink on one occasion, and we'd had battalion practice resisting an attack in the day. And we were coming back from one village to the village where we were billeted, and I saw two mounted soldiers coming towards us. So I did went through the exact platoon drill of falling to the ground and opened rapid fire, and it was the
staff.
He was mounted, and it was his batman who was riding with him, and I threw myself on the ground and opened fire, rapid fire, you know, and then you're dead. And all he did was take him away. Said to my friends, of course they were amazed at me doing such a stupid thing, you know, to the I'll think of the word, what the actual rank, when one of these days it's my memory is
this
very
is because
poor.
You were a little drunk. You were a bit drunk.
Yes, not so drunk as it would appear I had, but there it was.
It was only blank ammunition, was it?
I hadn't got my rifle. I just went through the motions, you see.
Pretending.
Yes.
So when did you come to move from this village back into the line? And
well, it was The French then had already had a hard time down at
Verdun,
and the rumour went round the division that we were to go down. Our division, after we'd been out on divisional rest, was to go down and even just for the purpose of showing the French we'd come to their aid. Nobody fancied that very much. We knew we'd heard a bit about Verdun and the casualties, and the Germans intended to take it in order to get through, to break through to Paris. But what happened then was, I think it was we were going to take over part of the line north of us, that's on the left, to to relieve the one French division under Haig's command. That was at around Arras. And on the way there, the whole division was on the move. It wasn't just being able to borrow the ASC, you know, for a battalion. The whole division itself was on the move that day. And stupidly, perhaps I wasn't aware of it. Silly if I had been aware of it, I got new ankle boots were on offer. We were even down to our own quartermaster sergeant, and a lot of you could have new clothes. For instance, I had cut my overcoat, greatcoat, the bottom, because it was all a foot soaked in mud and hard and was rubbing against my leg, and I cut it off, and that was a crime, interfering with military property. And I found myself then, when we were up at Maricourt, in front of our company commander, but he saw what it was and dismissed the case. But on this march back, and the whole division was on the move.
These shoes gave you trouble.
I'd got new boots. It paid me out. I was aware of every step I put down, a shooting pain through my leg. Finally, I had to drop out of my section and platoon and get hold of the handle of one of our company cookers just to drag me along for about 15 kilometres. It's an experience I shall never forget.
Did they mind you dropping out?
It was with the company commander's consent. I should have had to stayed. We marched for 50 minutes and rest for 10. And if I hadn't been able to do that, I should have been left on the side of the road.
Did many people have to drop out for that sort of reason?
So I believe that quite a number did, but I'd only worn these boots, army boots, for 1-2 days.
So, well, on this march, you went up to the Arras front.
Yes,
to replace the
and
French
division. It was rather interesting. We didn't immediately occupy the front line at the Arras front. We went into one or two villages behind the line. Why, I don't know. Possibly waiting for the French to get out. It was a big thing for a division to relieve a division. That would be artillery and all on its own ASC. And it was some possibly a week before we got actually into the line proper. But that was what was known a very cushy place. When we first went into the line as in reserve and carrying rations from the town of Arras up to the front line, and it was called the Boyau Dijon, I remember was the name, the French name. We called it Sunday Avenue, and it was permitted if you can get the Dixie of tea up with your other friends, you know, carrying it on their shoulders. Once you got it up and back again, that rest of the day was your own. It was about over a mile from where you entered the trench, which was within the streets of ours, and the front line. You could have eaten your meal off the trench boards. Everything was so lovely and dry and clear. Of course, the weather was clearing up, but that was